listening to CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal.
You are listening to CJLO News. A coalition of housing advocacy groups around Côte-des-Neiges and DG are asking the city to commit to more social housing at the Hippodrome site. In 2023, the City of Montreal announced plans to develop the 95-hectare area that was once the Namur Hippodrome racetrack. These plans include many ambitious details, such as a tramway, carbon-neutral infrastructure, green spaces, and community centers. Back in March of this year, the NDG Côte-des-Neiges Borough Council approved the plans for this site and announced that they were looking for interested investors and developers. They also committed to 20% affordable housing, 20% social housing, and 20% family housing in this new neighborhood. But many groups in NDG Côte-des-Neiges say the details around this development are still too hazy. A coalition, including Project Genesis, Femmes du Mont Côte-des-Neiges, and more, have been holding demonstrations, circulating petitions, and running campaigns, demanding a commitment to more social housing at the Hippodrome. This coalition wants to see 4,800 social housing units, with 50% of those units dedicated for families. The Organization of Housing and Education Information, OEIL, is one of the groups demanding more clarity from the city. The OEIL is a group that provides advice and assistance to renters in Côte-des-Neiges. Here is their community organizer, Pierre Clerjeune.
Here we're really talking about social housing to make sure that the family in this area, they don't have to pay more than 25% or more than 50% of their revenue, because this is the problem, one of the problems, not only in Côte-des-Neiges, but I would say Montreal and also across Quebec, because a lot of people, they are paying more than 50% of the rent, the revenue, only on rent. And this is causing a lot of trouble because they don't have enough money afterward to pay maybe sometime for food or for their kids. And we have this issue here. So we want to make sure that the city commit to how many social housing there's going to be in this land. And so far, it hasn't been clear.
Clerjeune says the amount of families who come through the center with precarious housing situations is concerning.
We have families as well, they can't find apartment because landlord, they're asking how many kids they have, and when they say too many kids. And when you have only 4.5 and sometimes 5.5 that they can afford, so where to go?
To Clerjeune, the development of the Hippodrome site is an opportunity for the city to address elements of the housing crisis.
So we want in this development, as I mentioned, at least 4,800 social housing on it, and we want as well school, we want a community center where these people, they can go to meet their organization that can help them in this area. And we want to make sure as well that this land doesn't, the speculation doesn't affect the units.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Adam Innes.
Another day breaks and the last one's gone. Carry on. Your debt's paid off, but it don't feel gone. So you slip out the back and you're moving on. Yeah. I can never figure out how to make a case that it don't amount too far from grace. She wants to know, can I replace this tired wool with satin lace? Since you're on a bridge, you know when you get that fast. Put it in the past, put it in the past. If this is a race, then I hope you come last. You're on a bridge, you know when you get that fast. breaks the door. You can build a house, you can't build a home. And it's a fool who believes love is bread in the bone. And there are no guarantees that you won't get stoned. Yeah, I'm a fool who believes love is bread in the bone. And there are no guarantees that I won't get stoned. Susie on a bridge, you know when you get there.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Tommy John Show here on CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal. Hope everyone is doing well, and we got an unbelievable show for you guys today. Man, so many storylines. We have officially hit the good time of year for sports. Baseball's pushing towards the postseason. Football training camps. We got preseason football this week with storylines there. We'll get into that. College football starting up in 2 weeks' time, 2 or 3 weeks' time. We'll get into that. And they released the AP polls. So, or I believe they're just about to release them this week. But CBS and ESPN and all those other people, they've released their rankings. We'll look into those and see what that means for the AP polls. I always thought they released them on the Monday of early in August, but they're not out quite yet in the next few days. But we will, everyone has the top five, I feel like, the same. So we'll get into that. And we have to talk about this Cinderella run at the National Bank Open with Victoria Momboko, who is in the quarterfinal. She took down the number two player in the world, the number one seed, the French Open champ, Coco Gauff, this weekend in Montreal. So we will give her some attention here on the show today. What a show we got. I cannot wait to get into this NFL news. So we have preseason this week, and I quickly just wanted to give you guys some of the storylines you need to watch out for preseason. We all know regular season. Is Rodgers going to play well with the Steelers? How is Caleb Williams going to look in Ben Johnson's offense? Is Mike Vrabel for real with the Patriots? What to expect in Detroit after losing both coordinators? Is Jaden Daniels, was that just a one-year thing, or is he the real deal? We know those storylines. Those are for the regular season. We got big ones for the preseason as well. We got monstrous storylines. The first one, and I feel like this is obvious, how does Cam Ward look? And I know it's the preseason. He's the number one pick in the draft. We want to see how this kid looks. Does he get nervous? Will he get flustered? This is not the Miami Hurricanes you're playing for, and you're not playing against Virginia Tech. No, no. This is the National Football League, and you are playing for the Tennessee Titans, who have been horrendous since Mike Vrabel left. So that's a big one in the preseason I want to watch out for, and everyone's talking about how will Cam Ward look. Another one, maybe even bigger, I don't know, is how does Shedeur Sanders look in Cleveland? All the reports is Shedeur Sanders is looked the best out of all of them. And there's these trackers of 7-on-7 drills and of 12-on-12 drills. He has the best completion percentage. He's thrown the most touchdowns, hasn't thrown a pick. So Shedeur Sanders looking very good in Cleveland. Dylan Gabriel, not so much. So that's going to be a big storyline as well. Shedeur Sanders, how is he looking preseason? Is he better than Dylan Gabriel? Which unit does he go out with? That is a huge, maybe even bigger than Cam Ward. I thought we couldn't get bigger than Cam Ward, but then I just thought, oh my God, Shedeur, all the hype, him falling in the draft, that's probably right there as well. Another big one in the preseason that I have to see is Will Campbell's arms too short? Because we're going to see now. And now, I know it's not the regular season, and who cares, but all the talk was Will Campbell. If he can play left tackle, he's the best player in the draft. No one knows. He played well at LSU at left tackle. He's got the frame. He's got the size. He's got the weight, obviously. But it was, oh, does he have 33-inch arms or not? That was the whole discussion around Will Campbell. So we'll see. Will he get exposed against lesser competition in the preseason? I'm very excited to see that one. And the final one in the preseason that I have to see is, how does J.J. McCarthy look? Because he's going to start for Tennessee once they let Sam Darnold go. It was J.J. McCarthy or nothing, essentially. I mean, I guess they could have signed Aaron Rodgers, but it was J.J. McCarthy or nothing else. And they, like we talked about last time, they took him in the top 10, moved up to get him. He was going to be their guy of the future anyway, and I respect that they're sticking to that plan despite Sam Darnold having a fantastic year. But he's coming off a bad knee injury. He missed all of last year. He lost a lot of weight, if you saw at the end of last year. I think he's attempted to put it on now. I'm just excited to see if J.J. McCarthy looks comfortable behind center. Does the knee feel okay? And is he making smart decisions in the preseason? That's the four or five big storylines I have circled when I'm watching preseason football over the next 3 weeks. Obviously, you could go ask Singenti, but I don't know how much they're going to use him. They probably want to keep him fresh for the regular season. He'll play a little bit for sure. But I'm not sure how much Ashton Genty will get with the Raiders. Same with Omarion Hampton. I think he only had two or three carries in the Hall of Fame game for the Chargers. And Trey Lance looked good, by the way. I was stunned. I know it was against the third string Detroit Lions players, but is this another project for Jim Harbaugh? He had Colin Kaepernick. He's had a whole bunch in his career in college, whether it was at San Diego State. I mean, he had Andrew Luck at Stanford, so I don't think that one really matters. And then at Michigan, he always had a project waiting, whether it was going back and forth between McNamara and McCarthy, whether it was Wilton Spate, whether it was all those guys. He always had these projects at Michigan, and now he's got another one here, maybe with Trey Lance. Now, he has Justin Herbert, but like he believed in Trey Lance. He was giving him the whole Justin Herbert routine when he's hitting the pads and everything before the game, and Trey Lance played pretty well in that spot. Now, I'm not saying Trey Lance is now going to go and have a Hall of Fame career or even get another starting job again, but he looked pretty good in the Hall of Fame game last Thursday, that was. So those are the big storylines that I'm looking at for the preseason. Now, we can spend the rest of the show talking about the regular season. Like we briefly mentioned, Aaron Rodgers, is Buffalo going to be back to their winning ways? What's the deal over with J.J. McCarthy? That's another one. But what's the big deal with Ben Johnson and the Bears? Those are the big storylines for the regular season. If Caleb Williams lights up the preseason, I don't think anyone's going to think anything. Like, yeah, who cares? So what? Let's see what you do week one. Same with Aaron Rodgers. I don't even know if Aaron Rodgers plays the preseason. And if you look at, like, Cincinnati, no one cares. Baltimore, no one cares what they do in the preseason. No one should really care, but you want to see flashes. It's usually for the crappier teams. Like Tennessee, you want to see if Cam Ward can play. The Browns, you want to see can Shedeur Sanders or Dylan Gabriel be a really good quarterback? Is Will Campbell's arms too short? Yeah, is Travis Hunter? Like, those are the things you're looking at in the preseason. The teams that picked 1 through 6 or 7 in the draft, or the top two to three quarterbacks taken, those are you looking for in the preseason to see if they can play. And I don't put a whole lot of value into it. Obviously, C.J. Stroud really struggled in the preseason his rookie year, and he went on to have one of the great rookie seasons of all time. So I'm not putting too much stock into that. But still, I just want to see them play, see if they have any tendencies, and then make my assessment from there. I'm excited for the crappy teams in the preseason. Then once we hit week one in early September, it's all about the main storylines again. And I'm not going to talk about Aaron Rodgers today, even though we could do that every week and people would be entertained. We're not going to talk about the Steelers today. We've done enough of that. We get it. Defense is ready to win. Mike Tomlin wants to win. They're vesting with surrounding talent to make Aaron look good. Now they're bringing in Aaron Rodgers. We've done enough about the Steelers on this program. Way too much. So we're going to try and go in another direction today. So we're going to start off with Ben Johnson and the Chicago Bears. And like I mentioned, this is a week one storyline, not a week one of the preseason storyline, week two, three of the preseason. Oh, you see Caleb Williams was 10 of 12 today in the preseason. Oh, okay. Chicago, it doesn't matter. It doesn't. I'd even go for Drake May to New England. If Drake May plays well in the preseason, okay, he played well in the regular season last year. It doesn't really prove much. But week one, it's going to be leading every talk show if Caleb Williams stinks up the joint. Number one is that it is a huge market in Chicago. They've been starving for a franchise quarterback. And when they got Caleb Williams, it was a gift from the gods. The biggest fleece, heist, whatever you want to call it, of all time, when they traded that pick with the Panthers to get Bryce, when the Panthers gave up everything to go get Bryce Young, and they were awful that year, and then they got Caleb Williams to the Bears, and other DJ Moore, I think one of the picks turned into Darnell Wright or something. It's a crazy trade, and Bryce Young honestly has looked pretty good, so it's not as bad a year later, but at the time, it was like, oh my goodness, the Panthers gave up everything for Bryce Young, who can't really play, and the Bears are going to get the next great quarterback. That was a year ago at this time. A year later, we're thinking Bryce Young's a bit better. And here's something big. They passed on Jaden Daniels to take Caleb Williams. So that's another big storyline. Jaden Daniels continues this unbelievable start to his career. What do you think Bears fans are going to think of? Oh my God, Caleb Williams can't play worth a damn. We took him number one overall, and Jaden Daniels completely turned the Commanders around. And what if Drake May starts playing well? Oh my God, we pass on Drake May and Jaden Daniels? And what if Bo Nix continues his upward trajectory in Denver? Oh my God, we passed on Bo Nix, Drake May, and Jaden Daniels? And then you have Michael Penix, who's in Atlanta, who looked pretty good at the end of the year. What if he continues that play? Oh my God, we passed on Penix, Nix, Daniels, and May? And then J.J. McCarthy hasn't played yet, and he's maybe in the best situation. So imagine Bears fans with the first overall pick in the most loaded quarterback draft in the last 10 years. Pick the guy who couldn't play. Now, at the time when they picked him, it was a slam dunk. Caleb Williams was the pick. He was unbelievable when he came off the bench at Oklahoma. His first year at USC, he won the Heisman Trophy. And he played pretty well his last year. Just the team stunk. He was doing miraculous things, running around trying to save his life. I thought he was decent his last year at USC, despite the team being horrendous. So he was the guy. He was going number one overall. And here we are a year later. Now, what's saving the Bears right now is that they got rid of Eberflus. They got rid of Thomas Brown, who's now the pass game coordinator for New England. Now it's all about Ben Johnson. They brought in the guru. They brought in the guy who's supposed to make everything right. And it's hard to say that the Bears made the wrong decision after 1 year, especially with Matt Eberflus not knowing what he's doing. And maybe in the best game Caleb Williams played on the Thanksgiving game in the second half against Detroit, he just butchered it. At the end. Yeah, well, what was it? Not using the timeouts, letting all the time run off the clock. It was a mess. And that ultimately resulted in Eberflus getting fired. And the team was so poorly coached. Waldron was not good at all. Was it Shane Waldron was the offensive coordinator? He was horrendous. It was no talent in the coaching room around him. Yeah, with Shane Waldron, who was the offensive coordinator, just horrendous. They brought in Keenan Allen. That didn't work. DeAndre Swift looked old, and that offensive line stunk. Outside of Adunze, who had flashes, and DJ Moore and Cole Kmet, like there wasn't a whole lot. Now in the draft, they went and got Colston Loveland. They still have Cole Kmet, so they have maybe the two best tight end duos in football. DeAndre Swift, Rome Adunze, DJ Moore. They drafted this Luther Burden kid from Missouri who always jumped off my screen. Now, there's reports he's a bit of a, I don't want to say a nutcase, but that's why he kind of fell in the draft. But the talent's undeniable. A year ago, he was going to be a first-round pick. There's talent there. There really is talent. And here we are, we got an offensive guru in Ben Johnson trying to save and trying to just bring out the best in Caleb Williams, because the highs of Caleb Williams are the best maybe in football. When he's rolling to the right and he zips the ball across the field, you're like, oh my God, this guy's unbelievable. But the bad plays last year, oh my God, were they bad. Think about that. Think about this. The Gerard Mayo Patriots went into Soldier Field last year and destroyed the Bears. And Caleb Williams looked like he had no business being on the football field. None. Absolutely none. And I tell you, boy, it is a scary, scary, scary sight when you see a quarterback with that much talent look that poor to start his career. And yes, it's happened. Peyton Manning's threw a million picks as a rookie. Jared Goff was 0-7 as a rookie with Jeff Fisher, and they brought in Sean McVay, and everything was right with the world. Fair enough. But ideally, that's not how it goes. Ideally. So this is a huge year for Caleb Williams and the Bears. You can't say it's the talent. Okay, the offensive line stunk where they traded for Joe Tooney. They brought in Jonah Jackson. They brought in the center from Atlanta. This offensive line is going to be miles better. And right tackle Darnell Wright was the only good lineman they had. So the offensive line should be much better this year, and it can't be an excuse. I'm sorry. They drafted Loveland to go along with Cole Kmet. The tight ends better not be an excuse. Look at the three receivers he's going to have. Luther Burden, Roman Dunze, DJ Moore, DeAndre Swift in the backfield. And Ben Johnson, the best play caller in the last 5 years, calling the plays. There should be zero excuses for Caleb Williams. And it might take 1 or 2 weeks. All right, fine. But if we get to Thanksgiving and the Bears are 2-8, this is going to be an unmitigated disaster. And the city of Chicago will be, I don't even know, heartbroken, frustrated, angry, because they're going to see this Jane Daniels kid. And albeit he went to a situation at Cliff Kingsbury, a number one receiver in Terry McLaurin, all this, fair enough. But the Washington Commanders did have the second pick in the draft. They did. He didn't go to Kansas City. He didn't go to Philadelphia. He didn't go to Buffalo. Or Baltimore. He went to the Washington Commanders and took him to the NFC Championship game. Some guys can just play. And I believe Caleb Williams can play. I saw it in college and I saw flashes of it last year. But if we get to week 8, week 9, and the Bears stink and Caleb Williams looks like he doesn't belong on a football field, oh boy. That is going to be a disaster, especially in that city. Oh my God. Imagine a team, they don't know, they haven't had a 4,000-yard passer. And they have the first pick in the draft of the quarterback draft of the century. Drake May, Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix, Michael Penix, J.J. McCarthy. And albeit they took the guy at the time. If I was the GM of the Bears at the time, I'm taking Caleb Williams. Of course. Based on his college career, based on everything. But it's just the most Bear thing ever. In a draft where they could have had any of them, the one they took and the smart pick doesn't work out. Now it's so early to say, and I hate doing this on August the 4th, at 1:23 in the afternoon. I hate doing it. And I'm trying to be optimistic for him, but I'm seeing videos in camp. He doesn't look as good. Oh, my God, imagine. Now, I'm rooting for the kid because I think he's a very exciting player, and the Bears deserve better. They do. They really, really do. But I got to tell you, if this is the way it's going to go, the way it's been going in training camp so far, then it is a disaster for the Chicago Bears. Absolute disaster. And the defense, you got to remember, won them a lot of games last year. And ever since that Hail Mary against the Commanders, they were not the same. The team checked out, but there's still talent on the roster. Now they got to be ready to go. New coach, new everything, new coaching staff. All that Matt Eberflus stuff is in the past. All of it. It is all about Ben Johnson trying to make Caleb Williams succeed. And I got to give Poles credit. the GM, Ryan Poles, I got to give him credit. He looked at the team. He's like, all right, it's not all Caleb Williams' fault, but what do we need? How about an offensive line? No problem. Let me trade for the best guard in football in Joe Tooney. Let me trade for another good lineman in Jonah Jackson. Let me sign a good center. Like that. It was like 3 days into the offseason. I'm going to do this. Boom. Done. Now, I'm not saying it's going to work. But Ryan Poles did his job. My quarterback can't stay upright. He's running for his life. Let me just get him good all-pro caliber players on the offensive line. Done. Next, what else can you do? Well, we're probably not going to bring back Keenan Allen, so let's use another receiver. Okay, let's go draft Luther Burden in the second round. Ben Johnson, I want another tight end for my system. All right, let's go Colson Loveland, 10th overall. Ryan Poles did his job. He went out, he hired Ben Johnson, fixed the offensive line on paper. That's as much as the GM can do, and he didn't go and get these unproven guys. Oh, fingers crossed they work out. Joe Tooney's going to the Hall of Fame. He's won, what, 4 Super Bowls? But an all-pro countless times for New England and Kansas City? That is a great move. Can't get mad at him there. They brought in the center from Atlanta, who's pretty good. And they brought in Jonah Jackson, who's been a Pro Bowl caliber player. They brought him all to the offensive line. So how can you get mad at the GM? You can't. They brought in the head coach that everyone wanted. He fixed the offensive line. The skill positions on offense that you needed to fix, he fixed. What are we doing here? And it's Drew Dahlman was the name. Thank you. 26-year-old. They went and signed Drew Dahlman, who was a very good center. Very good. They gave him $42 million. They didn't underpay at all. They overpaid. But know why he did it? To see if Caleb Williams can play. So there's no excuses. Ryan Poles said, you know what? Maybe Caleb playing, my bad. We shouldn't have had Matt Eberflus there. We shouldn't have had Shane Waldron as the offensive coordinator. My bad. I take full credit for that. But we're going to fix it. I'm going to bring in the best offensive coach and play caller on the market in Ben Johnson. And he's going to build his staff. I'm going to bring in elite offensive linemen. So what if they're in their early 30s? Elite offensive linemen. To build Caleb Williams' confidence for at least 2 to 3 years. And we're going to help build the offense that Ben Johnson wants. So that's running 2 tight end sets. That's getting another speedy receiver in the mix. He's done everything. You can't get mad at the general manager. You can get mad at him for not firing Eberflus earlier when Caleb Williams first got there. You can get on him for that. But you cannot get on Ryan Poles at all under any circumstances for what he's done in the offseason. He's had a great offseason. And don't get me wrong, the division's tough. Detroit's still going to be good. Green Bay is going to be good. The Vikings are going to be good. It's a tough division. But the main thing you want to see from the Bears this year is, can they be in a wild card hunt? And is Caleb Williams a stud? Was he worthy of being the number one pick in the draft? With talent around him and a good play caller, can he be one of the elite quarterbacks in all of football? That's what it comes down to. That's really what it comes down to. And I hope it works out for them. I really do. He's too talented, Caleb Williams. It's not work out. That's my mentality. I think it's going to work. He's got the talent, but the one thing is he doesn't really love to get hit, I don't believe, and he always rolls out and leaves the pocket early. That could be a cause for concern, but as we sit here right now, I think it's going to work out. I really do. We're going to go with a short break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a bit about all these players making trade demands in the NFL. First, it was Terry McLaurin. Now Micah Parsons. It's just really getting out of hand in the NFL, and I'll give my thoughts on it next. You're listening to the Tommy John Show here on CGLO 1690 AM in Montreal. We'll be back right after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
It's the sound of the Fantasia International Film Festival, back for another year on the downtown campus of Concordia University from July 16th to August 3rd. North America's premier genre film festival is your place to see the most eye-poppingly, face-meltingly extraordinary films from around the world. For more information on movies, tickets, and showtimes, check out FantasiaFestival.com. And be sure to listen to CJLO and check out CJLO.com for your chance to win tickets. This is all brought to you by CJLO 1690 AM and the fine folks at
Fantasia.
Do you like bubble baths? Hot cocoa on cold night? Snuggling up with a sweetie and listening to the radio? Well, if you answered yes to at least two of those, might I suggest Advice by the Fireplace, CJLO's number one easy listening comedy advice talk radio show hosted by me, Delilah Karen. We bring on a guest or two from the Montreal comedy world to answer real advice questions and maybe share a few funny stories along the way. Advice by the Fireplace, every Wednesday from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. right here on CJLO 1690. Oh, also, I love you.
Karen, Tom and John show. So yeah, big year for the Chicago Bears and Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson. Well, let's see what happens. They're definitely one of the big storylines in all of football. Maybe a bigger storyline at the minute has to do with the Dallas Cowboys and the Washington Commanders, but more the Dallas Cowboys, because I'll give Washington more of a break. Terry McLaurin's going to be 30. He's not Jamar Chase, he's not Justin Jefferson. He's a very good player, phenomenal player. But he's not on that level. He's one of the 12 best receivers in football. So that I get the hesitation there, but the Cowboys not paying Micah Parsons just doesn't make any sense. Zero sense. And I respect owners who don't want, if you don't want to pay their players, fair enough, then trade them. Move. But for the Cowboys, this has become a yearly thing. Dak Prescott, no. Let's let this contract negotiation drag out. All right, we'll sign you at the last minute. Last year with CeeDee Lamb, drag out. Right before week one, oh, here's your contract, CeeDee. And they did it with Dez Bryant. They did it with, was it DeMarco? What was his name? The running back there. Was it DeMarco Murray? They did it with him. Drag out. And then, oh, here you go. But they shipped him off to Philadelphia, if I remember correctly. But that was the huge storyline. He had that unbelievable year in 2014. And 2014. Unbelievable year. And then they end up trading him. But that whole year was the whole are they going to sign DeMarco Murray or Dez Bryant? DeMarco Murray or Dez Bryant? And that was the whole fiasco. When everyone knew, all right, well, they're going to pay Dez Bryant. But Jerry Jones, to his credit, just dragged it out. And every single talk show, every single newspaper, every single you name it in the world of sports was talking about the Dallas Cowboys. And here we are in training camp, well into training camp. 2 weeks in the training camp, and now he has his star defensive player requesting a trade, and the Cowboys being in the headlines. I think he does it just to get up the Forbes list. There's no way in hell you do not pay Micah Parsons. He's too good of a player. He's one of the three best pass rushers in the sport, entering his prime. And this is where Jerry Jones is going to draw the line? Here? Give me a break. And he can say whatever he wants. Micah Parsons is going to get paid. I'd be stunned if they trade Micah Parsons. Stunned. Do you know how much they would ask for in return? It's two first, at least two players who can play now. It's a fortune. And just because he requests a trade does not mean it's going to be granted. He's still under contract with the Cowboys, and they're not going to give him up easily. But I don't think they're going to give him up at all. Why would they do that? To me, this is just Jerry Jones wanting to stay in the limelight, keep the Cowboys at the forefront. Everyone in America and across the world who follows the NFL are talking about the Cowboys, and their Forbes value goes up. Because any reasonable person would sign and give Micah Parsons a contract extension right when he's eligible. Not a year after, no franchise tag, no kicking the can down the road. When Micah Parsons, after the production he gave you in his first 2 to 3 years in the NFL, you wait until it's the day he's eligible, and then you sign him. The fact that they didn't do that, okay, maybe you wanted to see another year, but the fact they kept kicking the can down the road, down the road, down the road, the price just went up. It's going to keep going up because the NFL salary cap's going up and the sports popularity is going up, and players are going to ask for more money. And don't get me wrong, the Cowboys, you know, if Micah Parsons isn't there, okay, they weren't going to win the Super Bowl anyway. But if they want any chance of competing, they need Micah Parsons on the field. Here was Jerry Jones, I believe was it yesterday, at Cowboys practice talking about the whole Micah Parsons fiasco.
Jerry, are you considering trading Micah?
Wait a minute, I can't hear anything. I really can't.
Really?
Really can't, yeah.
I'll do it again. Jerry, are you considering trading Micah Parsons?
Well, let's put it like this. Surely you guys have been around this stuff and know to recognize negotiation talk, that type of thing, and so that's where I put that.
So are you considering it?
I'm not. At this, the facts are that that's like anything else. I think the world of Micah, and that's just part of negotiation.
Would you ever consider trading Micah?
Again, I don't really place that with any real seriousness. You know, Micah's got a bad back. That's like being traded.
Did the request take you by surprise?
Y'all weigh it the same.
Did the request take you by surprise?
Again, no, that's negotiation. I've heard that so many times in my 30 years in the NFL about from not just players but agents and, of course,
So that was Jerry Jones briefly talking about the whole fiasco with Micah Parsons. And he's saying, I'm not considering trading him, all that stuff. He's saying the right things, but he's smiling ear to ear because he was, if you didn't see the video, surrounded by reporters. It was a mosh pit around Jerry Jones. And he's smiling ear to ear. He's like, I'm going to sign him. But I don't want to be in the headlines. Now, whether that's good for the football team, that's a different argument. Who knows? But as we sit here in August, right before the preseason, everyone on every talk show, I mean, nothing against Major League Baseball and nothing against the build up to college football, the NFL is king. And this is the down year for all the other sports, and everyone's ready to watch some football. And guess who's leading all the headlines? Once again, Jerry Jones. Jerry Jones. Every year, it's Jerry Jones. The Cowboys. Is he going to sign CeeDee Lamb? Is he going to sign Dak Prescott? What's the deal with Dez Bryant? Ezekiel Elliott all those years ago. All these contracts. Just wait. We'll get everyone talking. And then, we'll sign you. They're going to come to an agreement. I highly doubt that the Cowboys are going to trade Micah Parsons. That would be unbelievable. As we sit here, I can't wrap my head around that. All of this to say, He's going to stay with the Cowboys. I'm sorry. I wish I could say, oh, he's going to get traded. That's in Micah Parsons, Cowboys downfall. No, it's Jerry Jones wanting all the attention in the world for his franchise. So everyone talks about it. Everyone raves about the Cowboys. Oh, what are they doing? Oh, my God. Can't believe it. What are you doing? Cowboys, 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 Cowboys. And then, oh, my God, my phone went off. Micah Parsons got an extension. He's the highest paid pass rusher in football. Oh, that's what's going to happen. Where we spent months and months and months of time talking about it. It's been the whole summer. And I don't want to give myself credit here or pat myself on the back, but I said it with TJ Watt. I said it with Myles Garrett. I said it with all these things. I'm like, these guys aren't going anywhere. What are you, nuts? They just want more money. Now, the Myles Garrett one I wasn't as sure of because the Browns stink. And maybe he truly wanted to compete for a competitor and he signed multiple deals in Cleveland. But the trade packages were just outrageous. No team was going to do that. And the Browns like, hey, we'll just make you the highest paid non-quarterback in football. All right, I'll sign. And that lasted for an hour before Ja'Marr Chase signed his deal. But at the time, all right, I'll sign it. TJ Watt, you didn't think the Steelers, after bringing in Aaron Rodgers and bringing in DK Metcalf and going all Jalen Ramsey, going all in for these next 2 years, they weren't going to have TJ Watt on their football team? Of course they were. Same with Dallas. You think a team that's trying to compete with the likes of Jaden Daniels and the Commanders and the defending Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles aren't going to have Micah Parsons on their roster? You crazy? Of course. He's going to be on the team. He's going to get his big contract, and he's going to wear number 11 for the Cowboys. I would be stunned if anything changed. But in the meantime, we're talking about the Cowboys, and everyone on ESPN, and everyone on Fox, and everyone on SiriusXM, we're all the right people writing for The Athletic. It's all about the Cowboys for it all to be wrapped up before week one. And that's basically what it comes down to. Now, the Terry McLaurin situation might be a bit different. I still ultimately believe he'll play for the Commanders, but it's not as highly valued of a position. There we go. Got it out that time. Like, star pass rushers don't grow on trees. You pay them whatever, and if one becomes available at Micah Parsons' age, you go and get one. Wide receivers entering their 30s, the trade asking price not as high. And it's nothing against Terry McLaurin. I think he's a fantastic player, one of the brightest players in all football, can run every route, so elusive, and he's a great player, and he should get his money, but it wouldn't cost as much for a team to go and get him. But I would be shocked if Terry McLaurin got traded as well. Now, I know New England's looking in on him, and I heard the Steelers are calling about him. Let's see what happens. But it'd be very strange for a team like the Commanders, who brought in Laremy Tunsil to be left tackle, who traded for Deebo Samuel, who invested in the defense, kept Cliff Kingsbury, trying to make a run to the Super Bowl this year, and they don't have their best wide receiver. That would be strange. And it's not like you're paying Jaden Daniels now $60-65 million a year. He hasn't signed his contract yet. He's still on the rookie deal. He's one of the cheaper quarterbacks in football. Right now would be the time to sign Terry McLaurin. So I would be shocked if he got traded. It's far more likely he gets traded than Micah Parsons. But still, I believe at the end of the day, week one, he will be suited up and playing for the Washington Commanders. I fully believe that. Nothing against Deebo Samuel and nothing against the other McCaffrey kid. If they want Jaden Daniels to really maximize his true self, be the great quarterback, just become an even better quarterback, it helps to have Terry McLaurin there. He had a boatload of touchdowns last year. They use him as decoys. Cliff Kingsbury loves Terry McLaurin. So to me, I'd be stunned if he got moved. I really would. Both of them. I'd be more surprised if Micah Parsons got moved. If Micah Parsons got traded, oh my God. It'd be crazy. So my thoughts on the holdouts are, and the trade requests are, in short, it's just contract negotiation. They're trying to get leverage. We've seen this story a million times. Brandon Ayuk last year requested a trade. Deebo Samuel a few years ago requested a trade. It happens all the time. It's just trying to get more money from the organization. That's it. That's it. That's all it is. So Micah Parsons requests a trade. Terry McLaurin requests a trade. Let's see what happens. My prediction, they both stay and ink longer-term deals. Maybe Micah Parsons will probably be longer. Terry McLaurin's probably a 2-3-year deal. But Micah Parsons, it's going to be... I'd be stunned if it's not the 4-5-year at $42, $43 million a year. That'd be my guess. I'll go 4 years... No. I'll do 5 years... 210, 208, whatever. Was it TJ Watt's now at the most, right? At 41. I think Garrett's at 40 million a year. Watt's at 41. So he's going to be anywhere from $42 to $45 million a year. I think that's what the deal will come in at. Now, maybe they give him a fifth year, it comes down to $42 million. So, yeah, we'll do that. We'll do 5 years. 5 years at $42 million. So that'd be $210 million. Now, it might be the guaranteed money that's holding everything up. Fair enough. I'll go 210 by 400, 110 guaranteed. Something like that. That'd be my prediction. We're going to take our second break. When we come back, we'll take a look briefly at ESPN and CBS's top 25. The AP not out yet. I thought they would be out by now. Apparently not. So we'll get into that. See who they have number one and who they like to win the national championship. We'll get into that. And we have to get in to Victorio Mboko taking Montreal and Canada by storm at the National Bank Open. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Back after this quick word from our sponsors. Do not go away.
Dive into the ultimate comic haven at Crossover Comics. Unleash your inner geek with the best selection of graphic novels, manga, games like Pokemon and Magic, in-store events, merch, and more. Our knowledgeable and friendly staff have got your back with awesome recommendations for your next read. Score big with a free account. Enjoy comic subscriptions and membership discounts. Be in on the action at 3560 Notre Dame West in St. Henry, right near Metro Lionel Brew. Crossover Comics, sharing your passions since 2012.
It's a miserable Friday night. I'm so lonely, and nobody will give me a ride to the Grateful Dead concert. Oh, rats.
Don't fret. There's always Brave New Jams, your source for the best improvisational rock and roll. That's Brave New Jams, Saturday, 10 p.m. till midnight. On CJLO 1690 AM, CJLO.com.
Back here on the Tommy John Show. Man, What a time of year. I can't believe it. U.S. Open around the corner, too. We have, like we mentioned, we have Montreal and Toronto, the National Bank Open this week. And it wraps up Thursday, I believe, for the women. And it's the same for the men, yes. And then they go to Cincinnati, and then it is go time. The United States Open right around Labor Day weekend. Cannot wait for that, the year's final major. So, exciting times in the tennis world. On the men's side, you have Alex Zverev playing the defending champion Alexei Popyrin tonight around 7 p.m. And then after that, you have Alex Michelson, the American, taking on Karen Khachanov from Russia. And then tomorrow, the other quarterfinals will be Taylor Fritz against the Russian Andrei Rublev and Australian Alex de Minaur against Ben Shelton. That will be the last two quarterfinal matchups today and tomorrow. Tonight's a big one. Tonight is a big one if you are a Canadian tennis fan, especially because Victoria Mboko, the 18-year-old from Canada, stunned Coco Gauff and really took it to her in that first set. 6-1 was a tougher set, broke her late to win in straight sets, takes out the French Open champion, the world number two, the number one seed in this tournament because Sabalenka is not playing in Montreal this year. Just a phenomenal, phenomenal performance. She's played well, really took it to Sofia Kenin in the round of 64. Then in, what was it, the round before that, she had a bit of a tougher time, won three sets against the girl from the Czech Republic. Then took it to Coco Gauff, and tonight she's in the quarterfinals against the Spaniard Jessica Monero. So that is going to be some good tennis tonight. At center court, Montreal, at around 7:10. The first match today will be Marta Kostyuk against Elena Rybakina. And tomorrow, the other quarterfinals, you have Madison Keys taking on Clara Tauson from Denmark. And Naomi Osaka continues her run as she will take on Alina Svitolina tomorrow night at around 7. So those are the last quarterfinal matchups. And then Wednesday, semis, Thursday's final in Montreal and Toronto. But an unbelievable story from Victoria Mboko. She's really taken the world by storm. We all thought Leila Ann Fernandez would be a big storyline because she was coming off that win in Washington. Now, scheduling definitely messed her up. We understand that. But still, she played really well, but I think she was just exhausted. And then the next big storyline was Jeannie Bouchard, her retirement. She won the first match. Everyone's excited for Jeannie. And Mboko kind of went under the radar a little bit. But once Leila Ann Fernandez was out and once Bouchard was out and then Mboko now has gone a bit of a run, she is all everyone is talking about in the world of sports, at least on the women's side. It's trust me, the ratings are going to be through the roof. If she can get going, if she can get to the finals in Montreal, that would be something spectacular. Here is Victoria Mboko, the 18-year-old from Canada, after reaching the quarterfinals.
Okay, we'll start with English and then switch to French. Vicky, congratulations, it's the biggest win of your career. Just talk us through how you're feeling and how the match felt tonight.
Yeah, so it was one of the biggest matches I could have played so far in my career. And so far I feel really happy with how it went. Playing Coco is obviously never easy. She's number two in the world, and it's been such a great opportunity for me to play against someone like her. And I was just happy I kept my composure today, and I pulled it through.
Okay, we'll start here. Just raise your hand so they see you.
Hi, Victoria. How much do you realize what you just did tonight?
Yeah, I mean,
can you put it in perspective?
I don't even know what to say still. I was kind of shocked about it all. Everything kind of came so fast. There were so many people. So I feel like tonight I'll let it soak in a little bit more, but I'm still kind of on the high a little bit. But I'm super happy, and I'm just really content with how things went today and that I get to move on to the next round.
So that's Victoria Mboko after taking down world number two, the French Open champion, and the number one seed in the tournament, Coco Gauff, this weekend. So Let's see how she responds. It's a lot. She seemed very gracious and said, oh my God, I cannot believe I did that. Let's see how she responds tonight. But she's got the game, and she's only 18 years of age, which is remarkable. So huge matchup tonight, and we'll recap what happens the rest of the week next week on the Tommy John Show. So we got 5 minutes or so left in the program, and CBS Sports released their rankings for this year's college football. The AP polls will come out soon. For some reason, I thought it was today. I don't know why. Could I misread that, or in years past it's been like that, but it's not the case. They are not out. But we have the CBS Sports, and they're usually pretty bang on to what actually happens. We'll quickly run through the top 25. So number one, no surprise, is the Texas Longhorns. Arch Manning, the hype is real. They bring back Sarkisian as the head coach. Everyone's loving what the Texas Longhorns are doing. It's Arch Manning, favorite to win the Heisman season. The Texas Longhorns are rated as the number one team in the country. Number two, and it doesn't surprise me, but I'm surprised at the same time, if that makes sense. It's the Penn State Nittany Lions. Penn State. And I understand it's because outside of Abdul Carter, that pretty much the whole team's coming back. Drew Aller is going to go in the top five of the draft. The two running backs are coming back. Everyone loves Penn State. But I have never seen in my lifetime, I'm not going back into the Patino era, no. Paterno, no, 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 no. I don't remember much of that. Ever since Franklin's been the head coach, Penn State have never won a big game. Never. Don't give me the first round of the college playoff against SMU. Don't even give me the Fiesta Bowl against Boise State. Those are the two games Penn State won to get to the national semifinal. And what'd they do when they played a Notre Dame team that got routed by Ohio State? Oh, they lost. The only two tough games in the regular season they had were home against Ohio State in the Big Ten Championship. They lost both of them. And I understand Drew Aller's getting better, but until Penn State can prove to me that they've won a big game, they can't be ranked number two in the country. Ahead of Ohio State? That is very surprising to me. Number three is Ohio State, who won the national championship last year, and that is the first game of the year. Can you believe that? Texas and Ohio State. CBS has it 1-3 in the country. What a way to start off the college football year. August 30th at noon. It's going to be a Fox Big Noon kickoff. I don't know how I feel about that. I kind of wish it was Fowler and Herbstreit 8 o'clock, but fair enough. At noon, Texas and Ohio State. Number four is Clemson. Everyone's loving Clemson. Cade Klubnik played unbelievable at the end of the last year. They're ranked number four. Georgia, number five. Notre Dame, number six. The Oregon Ducks, 7. Alabama, 8. LSU, 9. Miami of Florida rounds out the top 10. And other key noticeable programs, they have Florida at 12. They have Illinois at 13. Illinois is bringing back a lot of starters. They had a very good year last year. Let's see what happens. Kansas State, 14. Did Arizona State, 11? Michigan at 15. They got the new quarterback there, the number one recruit in the country. Underwood, I think is his last name. Let's see what happens there. Everyone's riding high on Michigan after beating Ohio State the last game of the year. They're ranked 15. South Carolina, getting a lot of love, is at 16. The other big programs of notice, Texas A&M at 18, Tennessee at 20, Indiana at 23, Oklahoma at 24, Utah at 25. So some big schools that are not ranked based on CBS Sports is USC, Missouri, Baylor, Auburn, TCU, Boise, BYU, Florida State, Colorado, Wisconsin, Belichick and North Carolina aren't ranked. On CBS's rankings, to be fair, those are some of the big-name schools that are not ranked on their list. But hey, if you ask me right now, the three best teams in the country are Texas, Ohio State, and Georgia. Those are the three best teams in the country. Notre Dame's maybe at 4 or 5. But to me, Penn State is closer to the Notre Dame, Oregon, Clemson area than the Texas, Ohio State, Georgia area. Not even a question. So we'll get into more of that next week. Thank you guys for listening here on the Tommy John Show. We'll be back next Monday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern, right here on CGLO 1690 a.m., where we'll talk more about college football and the first week of the NFL preseason. I'm Tommy Lane for the Tommy John Show. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll talk to you guys next week.
Neighbor's dog shouldn't know.